Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan on News Talk. Ask the GP on Lunchtime Live.
Now, Dr. Anita Burns, GP at Generation Health Medical Clinic, is here to answer all of your questions this Monday. Good afternoon, Nina. How are you?
Good.
087 1400 106, that is the WhatsApp number. Can you please ask Nina for her opinion on, I'm going to pronounce it wrong again now, Avimus. It's for 12 to 14 year olds. I'm conscious of the effects of the long term use for somebody with
Avimus.
Rhinitis.
Avimus is a steroid nasal spray. So a lot of people who have, and rhinitis being the medical term for hay fever, it can be seasonal, which means it's just in the summer or the winter, and perennial means all year. So these nasal sprays can be quite effective in that they kind of help shrink back the sinuses, which allows the sinuses to drain, which helps then with the symptoms. I suppose they are a steroid. They're a mild steroid. You don't absorb a whole amount of them. So it's not like taking steroid tablets. We do normally say to people, take a break every now and then. Most people, even if they feel that they have what's called perennial rhinitis, there might be a month or two of the year where their symptoms aren't as bad. And I'd normally say, if you can, you know, the normal dose when you're over 12 is 2 puffs once daily. I always say if things are very well controlled, reduce it down to 1 puff daily, even 1 puff every second day. Or you might find even using it twice a week is good as a maintenance dose. So stepping up and stepping down. You know, we talk about asthma, stepping up and stepping down your treatment, and really rhinitis, we talk about one airway, one disease. So your nasal passages into your throat and into your lungs, it's all the same airway. And so stepping up and stepping down treatment is a good idea. Very, very rarely when these are used for a long time, they can actually impact inflammation in the eye. So it is something it's worth taking a break from every now and then. But it's not like taking steroid tablets. And I want to make that clear. It's not like, you know, you're not getting as much steroid as if you were taking tablets.
Okay, just sort of in the same category, this texter is 66. They've bad hay fever from late January to April from tree pollen and then a less potent reaction to grass. This year, though, they've very itchy eyes, currently sneezing at the minute. They had a skin prick test done, nothing positive except alder, hazel and grass. It's totally exhausting. Any advice?
So interestingly, if they've had a skin prick test done, they've obviously gone to see an allergy doctor who's done some kind of testing and they've tested allergic to grass. There is some immunotherapy. There's one called Grazex, and there are some other ones where technically they're giving you a tiny, tiny dose of grass pollen that then helps reduce your immune response to it. Now, it has to be started before the season. So like grass, typically it's a summer allergy. When you start this medicine, it's kind of used the January before to get you used to it, but it has to be prescribed by allergists. So what I would suggest is maybe going back to the person who did the skin prick test on you and talk to them about the various options available.
Okay, 087 1400 106 is the WhatsApp number if you have a question for Dr. Nina Burns. This listener is 52, female. They've constant stress headaches since June. They do have a very busy work and family schedule. They're quite fit. They run 8 to 9 kilometres 4 times a week. Their blood's quite normal, cholesterol, everything, blood pressure, the whole lot's normal. They did have a brain scan result last week and they've a bulging disc in their neck and white matter disease. The GP's told me not to worry, no symptoms. I do have an appointment to see a neurologist. Is this a normal diagnosis for somebody of my age?
This lady has a lot going on, doesn't she? She's got kind of a lot going on in her life and then she's physically feeling unwell. And headaches classically have complex cause. You know, it's very rare that someone who's getting recurrent headaches, you're just going to say that's exactly the cause. So you do sometimes need to kind of approach it from various areas. So if you have a bulging disc in your neck, that can cause occipital headaches, occipital being the back of your head. So certainly going for physio, keeping the muscles of the neck and shoulders as strong as possible can help. Stress obviously can cause headaches, not getting enough sleep, not eating well, not drinking enough fluids if you're busy. So addressing all of those things may help. Head massage can help in some people because, you know, the stress, you get this tension through the muscles and sometimes just helping relax, that can be really helpful. Taking paracetamol is quite safe for headaches. So, I would always say don't feel you have to fight it. But don't take painkillers containing codeine. They can cause rebound headaches if you're taking them regularly. White matter disease is a change that you see on brain scans and sometimes it's of no consequence at all. Sometimes if there's associated shrinking or any change in the blood vessels on the brain, we'd sometimes see that in the aging brain. So really, this person's only 52. If the GP has said there's no major issue to worry, it must have been sort of a mild mention. You know, the degree of it on the scan can vary. So it's very hard to comment without actually seeing the scan. And I suppose you are being referred to see a neurologist, so
there
it would be worth having
up.
A chat with them. But that sounds like that might be separate to the other causes of the headaches, to be honest.
Okay, this listener is female, 45, on HRT for perimenopause and suffering with very dry, brittle hair and nails. Their hair is very dry and breaking and it looks awful. Has Dr. Nina any recommendations for supplements they can take to strengthen it?
So I suppose, I mean, we'd always say a healthy diet is really important. You know, when it comes to hair, hair is protein. So protein and healthy fats are particularly important from a hair point of view. Perimenopause, hormones can affect your hair. Not always, for some people. So I guess talking to your doctor about the dose of HRT that you're on, and simple things like having other bloods checked, an underactive thyroid can impact on your hair. Have a chat about that. You don't have to take super doses of supplements. I mean, what I would say to people from time to time, if they feel their diet isn't what it should be, taking a general multivitamin can be of assistance, but you don't need to buy really expensive super doses. There are a number of very good vitamins that have been around for a very long time. Talk to your pharmacist, they can recommend some. But when it comes to diet, healthy fats, people underestimate how important it is to have healthy fats in your diet. You know, our skin and our joints and that we need healthy fats. Nuts are a great food to eat from a point of view of all the micronutrients that would be good for skin and hair as well. So supplements can be helpful, but I'd always say look at your diet first. Supplements are a supplement to a healthy diet.
Now, this texter, just, they don't go into much by way of specifics, but they're wondering what can cause blurry eyes specifically in the morning, Nina.
Yeah, that's how long is a piece of string kind of question. Yeah. It's very hard to answer that. I mean, simply, if your eyes are dry when you wake up in the morning, you know, you might find that you feel a bit blurry. It's very hard to say just on the back of...
Do they need an eye test more than a GP appointment?
Well, if it's blurry eyes just in the morning, that's a little unusual, because if there's an issue with your eyes in general, you would expect it to be there more than just when you wake. So it could be a simple thing like just dry eyes, just sticky stuff along your lashes. You know, if you get up and wipe your eyes, are they completely normal? Then it's unlikely to be anything to worry about. You can buy drops that you put in your eye at night to keep some hydration into the eyes overnight. That helps with some people. But anyone who has change in vision, I'd always say start with an eye test. Make sure your vision is okay. And then go and chat to your GP. I suppose the only caveat I would say is headaches, lying down and headaches there when you wake in the morning are something to talk to your doctor about, but that doesn't sound like this is the case.
Now, this texter has quite a bad sinus infection since the end of June. They've had two negative COVID tests. My sense of smell and taste haven't come back since, but lately I've been getting a sickly smell whenever I use deodorants, aftershaves or drink coffee or eat sweet food. Any thoughts?
Did this person say what age they are?
No.
So COVID can affect people's taste and smell, and it can take quite a while to come back. And the thing is, actually, any respiratory virus can do that. It just seems to have been more common with COVID. If you've ongoing sinus issues, that can affect your taste and smell, because obviously smell and taste are very closely connected. The reason I asked about the age is, I guess, you know, in a young woman, I would always say, make sure you're not pregnant if you've noticed any sudden change like that about smells. Things seeming to smell stronger or different. So again, if it's ongoing, go have a chat with your GP. There isn't anything specific other than that.
This listener is male, 35, and they've noticed that their eyelashes on their left eye have turned a little whitish or grey in colour. It's not all of their eyelashes. It's just about a quarter of their eyelashes over their left eye, and it looks a little bizarre. I don't really know what to do. My mum and my sister reckon I should get them tinted. My girlfriend isn't so sure. I don't know how I feel about getting my eyelashes tinted. Could I do something like that without compromising my masculinity, or should I just learn to live with it? Do you reckon the GP, I should speak to a GP as well in case I'm lacking in some form of nutrient?
Well, there's a lot in that. So, you know, people with an underactive thyroid can lose the outer third of their eyebrows. I'm trying to think off the top of my head, the outer quarter of your eyelashes changing. It's not something that...
And it's just the colour.
Yeah, it doesn't jump to mind that that's an issue. You know, we see people as their hair changes, they can get a kind of a lock of one colour grey and then the rest stays OK. I suppose eyelashes are a form of hair, whether it's something simple like that. I can't think of any other specific medical issues I'd be thinking about, because if you'd nutrition different difficulties, you wouldn't expect it to affect just the outer third of your eyelashes. You know, from getting it dyed, it's a personal choice. Mm. I wouldn't consider that a feminine or a masculine thing. If you want your eyelashes to all be the same colour, getting them dyed is obviously something that's an option for you. So it's a decision really you have to make for yourself.
It's quite a personal decision. Yeah. But do your eyelashes, do they, like, no more than your hair colour, does it go grey with age? Or,
I mean, I'm not thinking of any medical issues that specifically cause your eyelashes alone to change with nothing else. Obviously, people who've gone through chemo and various treatments, their eyelashes can be quite different after. But it's more when people have issues, it's more like they lose eyelashes as opposed to the eyelashes just changing colour.
Okay. Finally, so, this listener, Nina, says they're going through menopause. They're on HRT, but for the last 2 months, they're having problems with the urgency to go to the toilet. It can come on quite suddenly. It's a mad rush to get to the bathroom. After having a large family, my muscles were always a little weak. But how do I feel since going into menopause? It's gotten much worse than I had hand. Is there any medication or things I can buy which might help me with the muscles?
So there's a couple of things. So she's talking, when she says it's a rush to go to the bathroom and she has to get there, that's more urge incontinence, and that's an element, that's an issue with the nerves to the bladder. Stress incontinence, which is the kind you get from a weak pelvic floor, is more that you'd leak when you cough or sneeze. Now, obviously, it could be that she's saying she just can't hold her urine and she has to get to the toilet because the muscles feel like they won't hold it. We would always say go to physio. They can help work on the pelvic floor. If this is something new, and particularly in someone who's of perimenopausal age, I would always go to the doctor. They can examine you just to make sure you don't have a big fibroid or a cyst in your ovary or something like that that's suddenly making your bladder feel more under pressure. A pelvic ultrasound is a very simple scan to have done. There's no radiation involved, and I would always recommend that. And we do sometimes prescribe vaginal estrogen along with HRT to help put a bit of estrogen back in the vaginal area, which can help with tone. So a visit to the GP, have a chat, have a checkup, then consider pelvic physio. And yes, there are some options treatment-wise as well.
This listener was in the shower. They noticed blood on their leg. They think that they've nicked a hemorrhoid with a false nail. What should they do?
The blood's on their leg.
Yeah.
So a hemorrhoid obviously is a varicose vein in the back passage. So the blood would have come from the back passage. So just to be clear where the blood is coming from. Hemorrhoids, they can be there and they can flare and settle. So when they're flared and uncomfortable, they can bleed a little bit. I guess go along to your doctor, let them have a look. If it's a what we call a thrombosed pile, they can prescribe some cream or some ointment that might help.
Do you need to treat a hemorrhoid?
No, so hemorrhoids are like varicose veins. They're not dangerous, but it's because of where they are and obviously the pressure going to the toilet. You can put a lot of pressure into them, they can get swollen, and then you can get a thrombosed hemorrhoid, which is where you get a clot in it, and they're incredibly painful. That clot does dissolve over about 7 to 10 days, but we usually prescribe ointment, and in some cases it's so severe the pain that they actually release the clot. If people are getting a lot of problems, they can have hemorrhoids injected. But hemorrhoids in themselves, unless they bleed heavily, aren't dangerous, but they're just uncomfortable.
Yeah. Look, the listeners, if we didn't get to your questions, we will hang on to them. Of course, next Monday, being a bank holiday, it'll be the following Monday when we'll be back for Ask the GP. But obviously, if there's anything urgent in the meantime, do go to your doctor. That's all we've time for. Dr. Nina Burns, who's a GP at Generation Health Medical Clinic. Nina, thanks a million for your time on the programme.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan. Weekdays at midday on News Talk.